Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hey, everybody. I want to welcome you to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and we're going to do a lot of breathing tonight. No, it's going to be good. It's going to be good. I'm going to go ahead and get my co-host, Miss Amy. How are you tonight?
I can't talk right now. I'm breathing.
You know what?
I'm back.
That might be a good point. She's in present moment. And we have the wonderful, awesome,
the breather.
And amazing, the breather, the deep breather, Miss Kelly Kessler is with us tonight. Hey, Kelly.
Hey, how are you guys?
Great. Good to be here. Thank you for joining us tonight. She is amazing. If you guys have not gone, you want to talk, we're just going to right off the bat, I'm just going to promote your wonderful Facebook page. You want to talk about that for a couple seconds?
Thank you. When we got shut down for COVID, because I was most definitely in the shutdown category, I was talking with some lovely ladies, including Miss Alana and Robin and Amy, and it came out that I should do a Facebook. And the first time I did the Facebook, it came out of my mouth that I would be there every day at 1:30 until further notice. And that was 165 or 70 days ago. So
wow, I know. That's a big whoop.
Yeah, we get online, we breathe through the body, we get present with the body, and then whatever comes out of my mouth that day comes out, and that's where we go. It's generally 12 to 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. Some days are more imagination, and some of them are very grounded in the body, or are more so grounded in the body. And it's kind of hilarious because today's, I had not read this chapter yet, and I read the chapter after I did the Facebook. I'm like, oh, I said exactly what was in the chapter. Yay.
So,
yeah, you did. Yeah, you
did.
Yeah, you did. She's so good.
Yeah. So it was just, it's fun. I don't know. It just, it's always.
And where can people go if they want to start participating daily with you?
What was that?
I said, where can people go if they want to start practicing daily with you?
Oh, Kelly Kapsar, LMT, spiritual practitioner. And it's K-A-P-S-A-R.
There you go, Kaspar. There you go. Yeah, and I've every time I tune into you, it just feels like a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well,
thank you. You're just a special. Yeah, absolutely. It's the special time of the day that you allow yourself to be connected to the breath and to you, and just to just that present moment of whatever you're being guided to be, you know, assisting other people for. And one thing that's really cool is once you do tune in, even if you can't make it live with her, Facebook is going to remind you that it's already there and ready for you to watch, which is really awesome too.
And
I love that. Yeah.
And you can go to other days too. So, you know, you might just go in there and see, you know, a day that you're attracted to that she's done in the past.
There you go. There you go. Yeah.
And the fun part is that the Fur family is really loving this.
Meow.
my cat Kenya loves being on camera, and she frequently helps me with the Facebook. And we've had other Fur family join us, and sometimes the Fur family outnumbers the people family listening in. And
yes.
I've had a couple people tell me that their dogs tell them when it's time to be there. And the cats show up, and so it's really kind of hilarious that the Fur family is loving it so much.
Well, and just the nature kingdom of the animals know the benefit of breath. and they're trying to coax the humans into getting in there and doing something special. Yeah, because like they've done studies of people who have gone away, and they've done tests with people that the animals didn't necessarily know that they were coming back, but as soon as they tell them to switch gears and head back toward the house, they go to the front door.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
They just know they're coming back. Yeah, it's really fascinating. Yeah, it's just like this the entrainment and, you know, having them in connection with each other. Well, this is called Mind the Gap, which is a part of the fourth invitation of the five invitations, discovering what death can teach us about living fully. And I always want to thank Amy for bringing this book to the cafe, the book cafe, because it's, you know, every chapter, each section is such a gift of insights. And Frank is just an amazing person that he started a Zen hospice. And and it's amazing all the things he's learned and shared. And even with that, in this chapter, the Mind of the Gap, you know, Mind the Gap, talking about the breath and all that, just the level of him even now teaching breath and mindfulness and how he can get lost in the process of still having things that come up for you that you don't necessarily know were going to come up for you, which I think is so humbling and wonderful that he's being willing to be with that. So I want to go to the page 200, which is the second page. It said, breath offers an opportunity to study our relationships with ending in an intimate way. Breath is a living process, constantly changing and moving in cycles. An inhale, a pause, exhale, pause. Every breath has a beginning, middle, and end. Every breath goes through a process of birth, growth, and death. Breathing is a microcosm of life itself. And I just love that. That was so great. So how about you, Amy?
Well, one thing I wanted to go back to the beginning, right, we always start, and the quote, the T.S. Eliot quote, in my end is my beginning. And this first couple of sentences, of course, we definitely thought we have to have Kelly on. So let me kind of read you those. So it's not just about the breath, but it's about the endings and the beginnings. Want to know some of what death has to teach? Begin to look at endings, the end of an exhale, the end of a day, the end of a meal, the end of this sentence. So what this is all about is how do you meet those endings in your life? And every change is an end and a beginning. And Kelly, we're honored to have you. We're always honored to have you here. But I think this is something that you're so especially good at, is that gap and how to stay in that gap and how to move through the gap.
And what can we learn from the gap?
Well,
so much.
Oh, my God. Well, Alana.
I wanted to put that big question mark out there. So there you go.
So we're going to get to the flower of the day, but Alana can't be with us tonight because she just worked herself a little too hard today. So we honor her, and she's here with us. But she talked about the pause in music and how important that is. So just kind of sit with that for a minute, right, that the pause is just as important as the note.
I had heard that one of the great composers had said something about anybody can play the notes, but it's how you deal with the pauses is where it makes the really masterful music.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea who said that except, and obviously that's not a direct quote, but that's my memory of
somebody somewhere at some time, maybe.
Exactly. Exactly.
Close enough for us.
It wasn't about the notes. It was about the pauses.
Exactly.
And the pauses were what differentiated a master musician from a musician.
And Frank even talks about that, too. It can even be an art with the way you have, you know, white space. And being able to have a sense of a composition and how you're able to take in the information on a visual level, you know, and like look at nature, the way nature will have just these expanses of just a wide meadow and what that can feel like. We're going to talk about having a spacious meadow in a while, you know, when it comes to being able to have a happy cow,
being able to look at that. Mm-hmm. So, I wanted to go ahead and talk about
Robin, the pauses in conversation too.
Mhm. Really, the pause in everything. And you know what really I thought was real interesting is after reading this chapter, and I've been doing mindfulness and meditation probably for at least 30 years, I was actually doing a pause within the pause. So what does that mean? That means if I took a breath and I exhaled, before I took that inhale, I was breathing within the pause. So there's that spaciousness that really helped me to kind of sink in deeper. Even though I was breathing, I felt like I was breathing in a different way. Does that make sense for you guys when I'm talking about that? It's like I take that pause and being able to expand into that with the breath instead of feeling like I'm moving into something else. And it really, it was just so wonderful. It felt so comforting and just really in a place where I could settle in. And I really just love that. I've never really had that experience before. So how about you, Amy, with anything with the breathing and the gap?
Yeah, the gap, I think, is really important. We talk about, and Kelly can certainly address this better than I, that we breathe in and we breathe out, but there's that gap between the breathing that's happening all the time, which most people don't even realize it's happening, but it's a significant part of the breathing process. Do you want to say anything about that, Kelly?
Not directly about that, no. I've got something about fascia.
Great, go.
So fascia is the connective tissue of our body, and until the past 7 to 10 years, the medical community thought that fascia, which covers every cell of our body, every cell of our body, was medical waste. And fascia organizes muscle strands into the strands. It organizes it into the muscle. It organizes it into muscle groups. It organizes our abdomen into certain areas that have, and I think physically, fascia is the gap.
Wow.
That's so cool.
That's so deep.
Yeah. And I mean, if you want to go deep with that too, is just think about that, you know, they've come to realize through science is that, you know, it's not a matter that your brain thinks, it's your body thinking and your cells think. So when you come from talking about the fascia and having that be that much more of the connective freeway of connecting us and having it be basically like our phone lines or you know, virtual lines of connection that we have on everything on an electric level. Gosh, how amazing that is. Yeah.
So I want to do a little bit of a transition here. And on page 200, right at the top there, it says, the way we end one experience shapes the way the next one arises. So that's what gaps with breathing with everything. And so with that, I'd love to have you start the flower segment, Robin.
Well, and I thank Kelly for what she just talked about with the fascia, because the flower that came for me this week to share was the water lily. And it's interesting if we go look back at the last few flowers that we've had on the show with just looking at these really, really old flowers that have been around since the beginning of civilization. Carnations, and you know, go back and listen to some of the other shows that we've had. And water lilies were actually found; they were the first fossils that have been found as plants that were by prehistoric man.
Wow!
So it's very old. It's a very old plant that really they're really feeling like it was one of the primary initial plants on the planet that supported very deeply the ecosystem, and also itself. And I love the fascia because one of the things that was really fun is just looking around at the different things with water lilies. It's the largest water lily is 6 feet wide.
Ooh.
And it's a Victorian, it's the Grand Victorian lily, which they actually premiered in like 1840 or something like that. in England at the botanical gardens that they had there when they do their garden show every year. And what's fascinating about that is you look underneath, it's all these crisscross root systems that support the lily on the top. So it's really fascinating to see. Yeah, it's not the straight lines that go down. It's this crisscrossing that really supports things. So when you look at architecture, modern architecture and things like that, the way it's got this open space in the middle, but yet around it, it has all these honeycombs, just like in a beehive and things like that, the way that it's put together with all these different minor, you know, smaller roots that fuse with one another and go all the way into the muck of the mud. And I really love water lilies. Because it's such a beautiful, to me, it's such a great symbol of the breath. Because internally, when we're breathing in, think of the you know, your everything's going under the water and allowing itself to be spacious and expansive under the water and being able to have that silence. If you've been able to have yourself under the water and hold your breath and kind of just be in that silence. And one of the things that I always remembered, one of my first meditations that I ever learned was imagine yourself that you were sitting at the bottom of the ocean or like a pond and that the little bubbles that came out of your mouth were actually your thoughts and they come up to the surface of the water and break and that would just release them out into the air and you could breathe, you know, you were totally fine and it was a totally peaceful place for you to be. It was under the water like that and just allowing those thoughts to just come up to the surface and just go away. I thought that was such a neat thing. So it reminded me of that. And with this, the Victorian lily, it's just literally when I looked at it, it just looked like a life raft. It's just a life raft that supports us, you know, both, you know, internally and externally, the way it's just there in a buoyant way to be able to hold us. And just like you're saying prehistorically, how it's supporting this larger system and also taking care of itself at the same time. I think that's such a beautiful way of looking at it symbolically. There's over 200 species of water lily, too. And when you look at it, especially with Buddhism and things like that, there's a lot of more Indian philosophies that look at water lily as, you know, they use it that's like the national flower for them because it's resilient. It takes, you know, the mud of their, you know, coming up from the seed and rooting itself and being able to come up and just express itself in a glorious way on top of the surface. And, you know, having the trials and tribulations underneath, being able to lift itself up into the sun and be glorious in the way it shines itself and expresses to others. So I just think that's a beautiful way of having your internal and external and being able to have that ever-folding lily, you know, coming and expressing itself out into the world.
That's lovely.
So there was a sharing that Frank had with one of his students. Her name was Darlene Cohan. She was a Zen teacher who lived many years with arthritis and cancer. And the way she expressed her being able to embrace the pain and yet be in a place of breath, and connect in connectivity with everyone at the same time. They said, you know, how can you deal with all this? She said, my answer is that my healing comes from my bitterness itself, my despair, my terror. It comes from the shadow. I dip down into the muck again and again, and I'm flooded with this healing energy. Despite the renewal and the vitality it gives me, I face deep fears, and I'm willing to go on and allow the flow to sustain me and to heal me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was just really beautiful with that, yeah. So anything come up for you with that, Kelly?
Just that it makes total sense that the water lily would be one of the prehistoric plants and that it would have such a survival rate because if any part of us believes that there was a progression from the water to the land, there would have to be something that transformed with both.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
It would have had to have been resilient and courageous water lilies are beautiful.
Gorgeous.
So it made total sense to me that it would be one of the first plants around because it does, it creates a bridge with the water and the land. And if the earth was going through a transformation from water to some land, it made total sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that answers your question, but that's...
It does, yeah, because that's how it was. Yeah, very good. How about you, Aime?
Well, and it's part of the Lotus family, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that makes perfect sense for me. We tend to associate that with resilience and spirituality, and so that makes a lot of sense. It's a symbol that we see a lot for calm and for resilience.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But it's also living in its muck and working with it every day.
Amen. Isn't that our lives, right? Isn't that spiritual practice? You know, it's easy to do it when you're so pretty and everything's perfect, which I don't even know that exists, but let's pretend it does. But when you're having to pay the bills and you're having to deal with conflict and, you know, not that any of us have to deal with any of that, but, you know, some people do.
One of the people that Frank loves to quote is Suzuki Roshi, which was a Buddhist teacher. And he said the kind of meditation instruction he would give at the center was, to give your cow a large, spacious meadow is the best way to control him when it comes to mindfulness. Hmm. So what do you think about that, Cal?
What I heard from it was that we get to be with all parts of ourselves, the grief and the anger and the fear and the joy and the ecstasy and the bliss, and just let it be. And when it's got enough of a meadow, then it has enough room to be and to figure itself out.
Keep that cow happy.
Exactly.
Cow, cat, any of that. Like, yeah, they'll turn it into
well,
a cat.
That's right.
Metaphor.
We love animals, so whatever wants to come in.
That's like
so
a cat.
Robin, I
want to.
There's a part I want to read and then slide into to Kelly doing whatever practice she feels called to do.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So on page 203. I love how he, it's like third paragraph down, he says, the breath invites us into the body. Who would be talking about that? Our misembodiment and breathing. And he cites John O'Donohue. He says, the wonderful wild Irish poet, which I love him if you haven't read any of his books. And he said, we need to come home to the temple of our senses. Our bodies know that they belong. It is our minds that make us homeless. And he finishes it up with Frank. We come home as we sense the breath's texture, rhythm, and pace, the differing length of each inhale and exhale. With time and practice, we learn to align with the breath and move with it, to allow the breath in its own natural depth and flow. Every breath takes us to where we belong. As we relinquish command of it, we gradually feel the breath breathing us. This is a good training for releasing control of and understanding how to cooperate with life. Boom! Shakalaka.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Breathing is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Breathing is huge.
We're taking some good gaps this show. Our gaps are excellent.
I know, aren't
they? Yeah, yeah. They are excellent, excellent gaps.
Yeah. You know, our breath is always with us. And we can either tune into it or just let it do what it needs to do. And when we breathe more consciously, we have all the support we need.
So, Ms. Kelly,
always with us.
You're
and
are
not, that's a different subject.
So you are a mindset moment for the day, and however you feel called to do that.
All right. So let's just get comfortable. How much time?
5 minutes.
Yeah, about 5 minutes.
Okay. Okay. So let's just get comfortable in our seats. I like putting my hands on my heart or on my belly or on the fur family who's near me. And let's just take a breath in all the way into our lungs, the backs and the bottoms and the sides of our lungs, belly and the low back. Letting any tension and restriction just move out with the expansion and contraction of the breath. And we take the breath into the hips. And spaces and places of the knees. Take the breath into the ankles and the feet from heel to toe and all 10 toes. Into the shoulders and the shoulder blades. Letting that breath drop our shoulders down and back into a relaxed and strong position. And we take the breath into the elbows. And into the wrists and the hands and the fingers, all 10 fingers. And we take the breath into the neck. The muscles and structures of our neck. The breath into the cheekbones and the eyebrows, letting our eyes become soft. And we take the breath into the top of the head and the ends and the tips of the hair. And then we take the breath from top to bottom, front to back, and side to side. And we know that as anybody joins this at any time, the breath that we all take together is one and the same. And so with this, let's just breathe into the back of our lungs. And we can breathe peace. In the midst of the storms. One or two of us might have storms going on right now. Peace move through every cell, every fiber of our lungs. With special concentration on the back of our lungs. Breathing peace. And maybe it's a firestorm or a wind and water storm. Or a panic storm, transition, whatever the storm is, we can find peace in the midst of that. And so we breathe in the peace into every cell, every fiber of our lungs. And then we focus on our heart. And we let our heart feel the peace in the midst of the storm. And we breathe peace into every cell and fiber of our heart. With special focus on the back of our heart. And we find that peace in the midst of the storm. For that peace is in our breath. And we take the breath in, and we let the breath out. Knowing peace is right there. And with this final breath at this moment, with our hands on our hearts, we simply tell our body, thank you for accepting these changes, this peace, with grace and ease. Peace in the midst of our lungs, in the midst of our hearts, guide us forward in the rest of our day. We come back gently, easily, gracefully to this time and this place and this moment.
That was beautiful. Thank you, Mary.
Yeah, that was very beautiful. You're sorry.
So at the end of the book, at the end of this chapter, this section, he quotes Rumi and says, "Out beyond the ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there." When
with
the soul
my cow.
Lies down in the grass. With your cow, yeah. I'll meet you there with my cow. When the soul lies down in the grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, languages, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. So slip into the gap, because the gaps are not the enemy. They are transitions, the in-between places in life where we can find peace and tranquility and the freshness of pure awareness, a still point, the perspective that recognizes the holiness in all things. It's minding the gap. The sacred can be found in the ordinary, and rest can be found in the middle of things. Good stuff. Good stuff. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I was just hanging out with my good girl. Woohoo!
So our next section, we're going to be talking about courageous presence. And from what Alana has been saying, this is another one that she's underlined the whole part of the whole book. So we're going to have a great conversation with that. Yeah. It's like, okay, what haven't you underlined? It's all good. It's all good. Well, thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Have a
all
good
right.
week.
We'll
keep
see you
reading.
Here next time. Yeah. Keep reading.
Bring
and we'll
cow.
Look forward to your conversations over on Facebook.
Yeah, join us. Cafe Community.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.